Okay, this coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege of reading Parshas Vayetze. And of course, in Parshas Vayetze, we open up with Yaakov Avinu leaving Eretz Yisrael and heading to his uncle Lavan's house in Haran. Rashi points out that when Yaakov Avinu went to sleep on a particular spot, Vayivka Bamakom, and he put the stones underneath his head, when he woke up after his dream, the Torah tells us that he no longer had Me'amne Hamakom, but rather Vayikach HaSo'evan. And Rashi famously cites the Medrash that the stones had fought with one another, arguing, Alay Aniach Tzadik Es Rosho, that I will put my head on top. And what happened was, God fused all the stones into a single stone. And the Maharal notes that the binding of the stones came about because each one decided that he alone had the right way, so to speak, to be the bedrock of future generations. So Rabbi Dr. Benny Lau Shlita notes that the stones play a bigger role in the parsha. We find that Yaakov Avinu needs to push off a stone from the well. We know that he refers to the shepherds as Achai. And later, a stone is the thing that identifies the markings of Galeed. But who are the brothers that he spoke to then that Pasuk tells us that he tells his brothers, Liktu Avanim? So Rabbi Lau puts all the different stones together and he explains that the real secret of the original drash and the subsequent psukim in the parash is the fact that Yaakov Avinu teaches us that true tzidkus comes through solidarity. Instead of being focused on the individual stones, alai, 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 the achai, me'ayin atem, the achai, liktu avanim, of Galeed, all of these pieces are there to tell us that when we focus on why and how we came together, instead of who we are that we deserve to be, the one, that's how we develop into a secret, strong unity. Sometimes in our lifetime, we're so busy looking at the Plukta and the days of Pelek that it leads us to a certain degree to be lost. Our job is not to be lost, it's to be strong and to be together. And because in numbers and in unity and solidarity, there is a bedrock of our religion. Torah tells us that Yaakov Avinu then makes it to Haran, and he goes to the well, and he bumps into the Roim, and he tells them, so why don't you guys push off the stones? The stones, so that you can go ahead, lo'eis he'aseif ha'mekneh, it's not time, go ahead, hashku hatzon ulechu re'u, go water the sheep and get back to work. And the shepherds respond and they say, lo nuchal in Perek Chavtes, that we cannot do so. Now how was it that these really strong shepherds are unable to push off a stone, but the young yeshiva bacher, who is Yaakov Avinu, turns around and he pushes it off, you know, almost individually, single-handedly. So Rabbi Lam Shalita would often point out to us that the difference was in the fact that they said, lo nuchal. Yaakov Avinu never lived in a lifetime where he allowed himself to say, ani lo yachol, that I cannot. He had that proper attitude that helped him work for 14 years for his beloved wife, and he saw it as a nothing. It was that attitude that helped him overcome the battle with the sorrow shel Esav, and got him to realize that, ki sarisa im anoshim elokim ve manoshim batuchal, that I can do it. And with the right attitude, I'm not accepting lo nuchal, anything comes along and can be possible. So, of course, he asks about Lavan, and he's told that Lavan has a daughter, Rachel, who's coming with the stone, with the tzon, with the sheep. Now, the Torah tells us, as a byproduct, that there were actually two daughters. And the other one, we're told, Ve'ene Leah Rakos, that Leah's eyes were soft. And Rashi explains that her eyes were soft from constantly crying about the potential to be married to Esav. Ramirel of Primishlan notes that she cried on purpose, not to get Esav's interest, who wants to go out with somebody who looks so uncomfortable, who looks like every minute you spend with the person is a terrible discomfort. And the Ben Yehoyada seems to add that when she saw that the tzaddik Yaakov Avinu couldn't influence Esav, how would she be able to do so? And so she cried over that particular matzav. Towards the end of the parsha, we read a lot about this episode that took place after the Shvatim were born, after 14 years had gone by, and Yaakov Avinu works on another 6 years of working. And we read all about the issue about the sheep. And we're told that they are akudim, nekudim, vrudim. It's a very long section of the Torah that seems to have like no real excitement in it. So why does the Torah want us to understand about how these sheep were achieved and how Yaakov Avinu built his wealth? Who cares? So the Slonim Rebbe, Zechet Tzadok Livracha, the author of the Nesiv HaShalom, points out that this section of the Torah has many, many deep sodos, deep secrets. And at one level, says the Nesiv HaShalom, the different styles, the mark, the striped, and the spotty, refer to different ways of serving Hashem. At first, one uses the basics of Emunah. You need to know the general rules. And this is a reference to the mark, the Akudim. After that, one gets to the dotted, which refers to feeling emunah specifically in a heart, like a concentrated emunah that's likened to a dot, and hence the nikudim. And yet, that emunah needs to be actualized, which is that it has to be carried through the spine to all of the limbs that make the emunah go into action. And hence we talk about the stripes. The stripes is a reminder of the spine that carries throughout the body. Akudim, nikudim, vrudim. That's how we have to live with our avodas Hashem. And so after Yaakov Avinu develops his financial abilities, Yaakov sees the face of Laban, and he sees that it's no longer like it was mitmol shalshom. And Yaakov Shimoni comes along and explains that a person's heart changes itself between good and bad. And that's just the facts of life. Hashem told Yaakov to see that change and to pick himself up and return back to his own parents' home. So Rav Altusky Zatzal, the author of the Kiddushei Basra, so he adds that Yaakov's realization of this change allowed Laban's influence over him to be severely limited. By recognizing that the person he thought he was controlled by, that person being Laban, and he saw that he was changing, so Yaakov allowed himself to turn around and distance himself and distinguish himself and his family from Laban. Being aware of influence and being aware of the limitations of the person who is influencing you often can serve as an impetus to get an individual to turn around and make a change. And this ability came out when Yaakov actually looked at Laban again. The person he saw was a different person. So Yaakov calls Rachel and Leah back to the field. And he begins with the speech, Atena yedatem, you know, ki b'chol kochi avadeti es avichem, I worked with my whole force to your father. Roshach Tashlita would note to us that each person who needs to work needs to put his whole force into his work, of course within the limitations of societal norms. Roshach would often note that this is part of the difference between the Shomer Chinam and the Shomer Sachar. The Shomer Chinam, the individual who provides Shmira for no pay, needs to want something in the way that the Baal HaBayis does. But the Shomer Sachar, the one who gets paid to do the job, based on the way that Yaakov Avinu engaged over here, as described by his argument to his wives and Laban's daughters, his employer's daughters, seems to suggest to us that we need to provide a better Shmira when we're Shomer Sachar than the Baal HaBayis himself would provide. The Shomer Sachar, therefore, is like a pole, is like a person who works, who needs to put his whole force into the work. So the Rambam, when he cites this ruling, he refers to a Yaakov Avinu as a tzaddik for this. That's the language of Yaakov Avinu. He is a tzaddik, but the way he demonstrates his tzidkus is in the fact that he put his full effort into his job, and that's the way we need to put and see our tzidkus as well. That's the direction and the message for us. So Rachel and Leah respond, Ha'od lanu chelek v'nachala b'veis avinu, do we even have any inheritance in our father's home? Now the question is to be raised, why did they give such a strong introduction to their response? Why do they have to turn around and say, financially we lose nothing by listening to Hashem? Why does it sound as if listening to Hashem was just a byproduct of having nothing else? Maybe you should do it l'chatchila. So Rav Elia Lopian Zecher Tzadok Livracha explains that no, Rachel and Leah were teaching us that we're not supposed to view listening to Hashem as a burden. They were showing us that leaving, going back to Eretz Canaan, was not going to be a sacrifice to them, and that that's how serving Hashem was meant to be done, with the awareness and knowledge that serving Hashem comes with a happiness, rather, and that lies in shunning the falsehood of the vain pleasures of this world. So I don't have to think that I'm giving up and sacrificing to be a good Jew. What I need to do is realize there's no reason to sacrifice. This is ideal. This is the right way to go. And so that's what they're telling Yaakov Avinu here as well. Finally, in the Haftorah, we're going to read the Haftorah of Vayivrach Yaakov Sadei Lavan. Right? Yaakov Avinu runs away and from Hoshea. And it ends, of course, with the introductory verses from the Haftorah we call Shabbat Shuvah. So Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadok Shalita, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, the son of the great Rav Aaron Zecher Tzadok Livracha, and the Rosh Hashiva and Haaretz Zion, Rav Moshe Shalita points out that the connection between the Parsha and the Haftorah is in the fact that both describe the absence of faithfulness in exchange for the pursuit of money and monetary gain. Hosea goes ahead and gives Musa to the people in this regard. But Yaakov Avinu does so when he realizes the fact that his challenges in Charan were not going to be based on overt anti-Semitism. Rather, it's going to be in being in the face of those people who trade loyalty, who trade personal fidelity, who trade financial compromise in exchange for monetary concerns. And unfortunately, in Hosea's time, where he was ministering to the people in the 10 tribes, they inside of Yaakov's children, the same challenge existed. So the end of that process is Shuva Yisrael. But that Shuva can only come in the wake of the opening of closed hearts. And the Shuva that he describes, which occurs at the end of the Haftorah, is born out of a feeling and a situation of failure. Not as a result of the fact that there's actual overt religious awareness in of itself. Ephraim comes to go ahead and engage in Shuva only because the derech of chet doesn't succeed. There's no positive that comes out of being a chotei. And sometimes the source of tshuva is not a spiritual thirst, it's only the feeling of failure. That too is a tshuva. Ha'od lanu chelek v'nachala b'beis avinu. Sometimes you come around to it, to going in the right direction, because you realize there's nothing lost by going in the right direction. All the other ways don't work themselves out. This becomes an important lesson, not only for B'nai Rachel Valeya, it becomes important as a backbone for Am Yisrael in the future as well. May we get to that future. May we hear the words of Hosea. May we also be Zocha Lashuv, so that we can get to that place where we can celebrate the ultimate Shabbat Shalom and the Yom Shekulo Shabbos Umnucho L'Chaye Olamim with all. Shabbat Shalom.